Critical thinking is a persistent effort to examine any belief or supposed form of knowledge in the light of the evidence that supports it and the further conclusions to which it tends. Critical mass is the point at which a reaction becomes self-sustaining.
You're listening to the Critical Mass Podcast. I'm your host, Winston Crutchfield. Today I've got a great interview lined up with author and editor Phil Elmore. We're talking mostly about his new anthology collection, The Spirit of St. Louis, and issuing a general call to writers of flash fiction interested in the Art Deco steampunk genres. So hang around, check that out with us. Meantime, the big happenings here at Critical Press Media are the two new benefit projects that are going to be running over the summer. So get me your submissions. Project number one is Miracles, and deals with the subject of miracles, which are defined as an expressly divine supernatural event. And I'm interested in stories dealing with that. You can find more information about that on the submission section, as well as the second book, Forerunner, which deals with the concept of somebody who goes ahead of somebody and with their authority and power. And both inspirations for those are drawn from the book of Luke, from Luke chapter 3 for Forerunner, and from Luke chapter 7 for Miracles. So check those out and start sending in your submissions, and we'll put together two new books by the end of the summer. Meantime, I know you've been hanging around waiting for this, so here's the reaction chamber. So I'm in the reaction chamber with Phil Elmore, guest on the show. Phil, how are you today?
Hi, Winston. Doing good.
Fantastic. Well, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. You've got a lot of projects on the wire. But first and foremost, what I called you about, what had really caught my attention, was the Spirit of St. Louis and the collection of the anthology that you're doing there. So before I get distracted, and you know that's known to happen, tell us about the Spirit of St. Louis and what's going on with that.
Well, the Spirit of St. Louis is the title of the first in what will hopefully be a series based on this Mega Trains concept that League Entertainment has developed. League Entertainment is an intellectual property development and publishing house in Florida, and League specializes in the creation of multi-platform intellectual property for the entertainment and publishing industries. I happen to be in the enviable position of being their senior editor, and the first task that has been officially assigned to me is to edit The Spirit of St. Louis, a collection of what we believe will be 20 flash fictions, each of them about 1,000 words long, set in a future in which war has devastated the planet and most of humanity exists on these city-sized trains, the mega trains that roam the earth, just constantly moving, doing whatever it is our flash fiction authors say that they do. The Spirit of St. Louis being arguably the most magnificent of these. There's a website set up for prospective authors because we issued a general call for submissions to the collection, and that is megatrains.blogspot.com. And the description of the entire universe of the megatrains, including what authors can and cannot do in that universe, is completely outlined there, as well as a short story in the collection that I actually wrote, which is the template, to give authors an idea of what we mean when we say 1,000-word flash fiction set in this universe. So if you go to megatrains.blogspot.com, there is a story there called Prefall, which is offered as an example of the type of story that will populate this collection. It's really exciting, too, because we've got some really great authors lined up to do stories in the collection. There's Richard Lee Byers, Jack Holding, I hesitate to mention myself, but There's also Adam Troy Castro.
I saw that.
One of the authors. Ron Fortier. There's a listing of all the people who've signed on so far. Adam Troy Castro wrote Z is for Zombie, which I think is out on the shelves right now, still in the stores. Ron Fortier worked on Green Hornet. Richard Lee Byers, many people will recognize him from Forgotten Realms, among many other things.
Sure. Yeah, Adam Troy Castro, I didn't read the zombie work, but I remember his work with Marvel back in the 90s,
yeah.
And was a big fan of that. So I'm really looking forward to it. But your general call caught my eye, and that's something my audience especially is going to be interested in. So that's excellent. And the website is megatrains.blogspot.com for...
Yes.
Okay. Sweet.
And I'm really excited to see the entries in the collection. The first collection, Spirit of St. Louis, will be mostly named authors, mostly people that our readers are probably already familiar with. And we hope in subsequent collections to be able to include more people who maybe you haven't heard of before, but you will now.
Exactly.
So it's one of the joys of being editor is you get to see all this stuff first. I get to read everything. Ha ha ha.
Well, you know what? The slush pile is wrongly seen as a chore when it is a source of great joy to me. But maybe that's just me.
the opportunity to get to read everything as it comes in. And there's a certain weighty responsibility to picking and choosing what you believe to be the most likely stories to populate a collection like this.
Right.
Because you want to make sure that you do every author justice, and you want to make sure that you do the collection the service of making sure the absolute best gets into it. And the nice thing about this is that just because a story doesn't make it into the first collection doesn't mean we won't be able to use it subsequently.
Right. You know, plus you have issues of theme and consistency and all of these things that have to go into selecting stories for an anthology. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that the reasons for excluding a manuscript often, far outnumber the reasons for including it and often have nothing to do with the quality of the manuscript itself. But
no, that's true. That's true. And I've had to learn as editor how to communicate in the most effective way possible. Meaning, I've been a professional communicator all my adult working life. I've been a technical writer. I've been a freelance writer, an author. There's a special kind of communication that comes when dealing with fellow authors because you've been there. You know what it's like, and you know how you would want to be treated. And in order to communicate with people fully so that you express to them, this is the quality of your work and it's good, if I can't use your piece, it's not because, well, hey, by the way, you suck. Which would be so easy to miscommunicate in so many different ways.
Really, every
author is different. There's so many different styles and so many different ways people approach their work and how they produce their work and what they think of their work. I've met authors who were, if you wanted to change so much as a word, they wanted to know about it. And I've had authors who were like, hey, whatever you do is going to make me look better, so do what you need to.
Exactly.
And everyone falls somewhere on that spectrum, sometimes wildly at the extremes. And that's part of the joy and also the challenge of editing is making sure that you coordinate those. It is as much a diplomatic position as it is a working position. It's both.
Very eloquent. Couldn't have said that better. That's awesome. One of the things that you're doing with the stories that really caught my eye is that you're going to be illustrating each story with a tarot card style, and the style of the illustration, what it looks like from the picture is you've got like a tarot card that has the title of the story, and then this kind of Art Deco steampunk image of the story synopsis, or something that summarizes the story, and I imagine that authors who can lean their stories toward, where it presents an image like that will have a little extra help there.
Well, one of the things that League Entertainment has going for it is that one of the two men behind Entertainment, John Jackson, you may know better as Johnny Atomic, the person who illustrated Z is for Zombie. Johnny is probably one of the most famous cover art authors I can think of. He's extremely talented. Everything he does is absolutely gorgeous. I have been absolutely thrilled to see him illustrate things that I've written, stuff that I can't even talk about because it's not released yet. He's done some, you know, some speculative material for me for future work and so on. And looking at the covers that he does, they're really, really good. And to picture a book collection that has, you know, 20 of these in it, or however many it turn out being, one for each story, that's just going to be gorgeous. I'm really looking forward to seeing the imagery that he comes up with. It's not the case that an author would need to tailor his work towards that imagery, because part of John's talent is finding not just the image in the story, but finding the image you wouldn't expect, asking the question, well, what would the reader typically expect to see, and how can I present to him something that's different from that? What is it not? And John actually, as a side business through League Entertainment, the website is called AtomicCovers.com, www.AtomicCovers.com. Because the League will do book packaging and produce and publish books for authors, they offer painted covers, covers actually painted by John, not, you know, the type of clip art type mashups that you typically get. Like, say I self-publish a book, most self-publishing companies will offer me a service where they'll put a cover together for me, but sure, these are not hand-painted covers by a professional and famous artist. Whereas if you bought the service at AtomicCovers.com, it's extremely affordable in terms of, you know, getting a professionally painted cover for your book. And I don't think people like to admit it, but a really good cover can make all the difference to some prospective customers. You know, people will look at the description of your book, yes, but having a cover that really says this is a beautifully professionally done book can make all the difference in terms of prospective sales. So, and then I have no, I'm not connected to AtomicCovers.com. I work with the League and I work with Johnny, but it's not like, you know, every time he sells a cover, I get a cover.
Right.
So, you know, it's, if I was in the market to publish a book, I would be working very hard to see if I couldn't have him paint my cover.
Well, that's awesome. That's great to know. I really like that art. I'm going to definitely be checking that out and steering people towards it, too, because that sounds, that's just not something that you see very often, and especially at, you know, affordable rates for,
well, I
for the self-published
authors. Well, I actually have one of John's interior pieces of artwork from the gallery that, I can't recall if it's the gallery from Atomic Covers or if it's the gallery from his personal website, JohnnyAtomicStudios.com, but I use that as my wallpaper. He's done a lot of really great work, and some of it is up on the web for anybody to see. And he also maintains, and I'm not an artist, so it's not as applicable to me, but he maintains a blog called Art the Savage Business, and people who I've shared that with on Twitter and other social media sites who are artists have told me how informative they find that, because he's worked his way up through the art industry, you know, through his own blood, sweat, and tears, and has a lot of stories to tell and isn't afraid to tell them. So I enjoy just kind of going through it and, you know, living the life of an artist vicariously through this blog.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, just to remind people that we are actually talking about books and not just and not just the art. You know, this is the guy who's going to be illustrating The Spirit of St. Louis. So
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And The Spirit of St. Louis is just one of many IP products offered by League Entertainment. And the reason every other word out of my mouth is League Entertainment recently is because I'm their senior editor as of recently. There's a lot of really cool products coming out that I think listeners to your podcast would enjoy. In previous interviews, we've talked about the work that I've done with the Executioner series and Mac Bolan and, you know, the action,
yeah, absolutely,
genre. And as it happens, every Friday at www.league and League Entertainment's website, I do an action spoof called Duke Manfist, a Justifier. And Duke Manfist is every over-the-top parody and stereotype of every action book you've ever written mashed together in this sort of ball of absurdity that I have made into a series.
And it is a thing of inexpressible beauty that you have going on there. I look forward to my my weekly dose of Duke Manfist. So,
well, you know, the name Duke Manfist actually was produced in a conversation that John and I had. We were discussing books that we don't like, and books whose characters are just completely over the top. And he was, I don't even remember now which book he was talking about, but he was talking about this really overwrought piece of action where, you know, the hero walks in the room and everyone's terrified of him, and he, you know, he's practically the Terminator. He has no weaknesses. He's the coolest guy ever. Right. He's the manliest man ever to walk the face of the earth. And John said, and I don't know what the character's name was. It might as well have been Duke Manfist or something. And I started laughing. And I said, we should, you know, that is hilarious. That's a really good character name. And we hit on the idea of doing this spoof series, you know, based purely on my last 5 years of doing action novels. My lifetime of reading action novels.
Well, it's genius. It's brilliant. And it's very, very funny. Even if you're not a diehard fan of the action genre, this is just, you know, genuinely funny material. So, anybody who's not reading Duke Manfist, I can't recommend it enough.
Well, and if anybody who wants to find Duke, you can either go over to www.leagueend.com. A new one comes out every Friday. Or my website, philelmore.com, there's a link, and you can't miss it because it looks like a business card that is mostly an American flag. John, of course, this is the beauty of having an artist on hand who's, you know, equally responsible for the material. John not only helped, you know, we invented Duke Manfist jointly, and he illustrated the very first episode of Duke Manfist where Duke gives his business card to someone, and he created a piece of art of that business card.
Right.
It's even got a phone number on it, and he created a new banner for Duke recently where he's standing there with his impossibly huge handgun against the backdrop of the American flag. Duke even has a Twitter account, and occasionally will tweet his bits of manly wisdom. So,
well, you know what? You and your Twitter campaign to promote this before it launched has gotten me in so much trouble because it was just so funny that my kids have picked up on it, and they picked up on the tweet meme that you started. So now wherever I go, I've got a 7 and a 10-year-old exclaiming every time that, you know, I tell them to do something, they exclaim, "I'll do it with my fist."
You know, we didn't set out to make that Duke's catchphrase. It just sort of evolved holistically. But without a doubt, Duke Manfist has a catchphrase, and it is dot, 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 with my fist.
That's right.
So, and what was really funny was to see different people on Twitter picking up on that and just talking about random things and you know, and ending it with. But it really it lends itself to so many different funny sentences. There's some, Duke will eventually be collected when we've got enough of these, you know, mini episodes.
Sure.
It'll be collected most likely into an ebook format of some kind. And right now, in development, the league is considering doing some animated microsodes of Duke Manfist based on the episodes that we've put out so far in print. So I'm just completely tickled pink at the idea of seeing Duke come to life in animation. You know, with his mighty fist swinging for justice. This is part of the transmedia approach that the league takes. You know, that we have one of the flagship products of the league that will be coming out, I believe it's scheduled for fall of this year, is a science fiction novel called Simon Vector. And Simon Vector, as a flagship intellectual property of the league, won't just be a novel. There is plans to do a graphic novel where a character introduced in the Simon Vector novel will be the focus of the graphic novel. There are plans to develop other spin-offs like a podcast, you know, those old 1930s radio serials or the Saturday afternoon movie serials involving Flash Gordon, those types of things. They're planning on doing some podcasts that are takeoffs on the 1930s radio approach to these episodic action adventures. Simon Vector is sort of like the dark Flash Gordon. It's a science fiction, larger than life, heroic action fiction piece featuring a decidedly dark hero. So I'm really excited to see that come out and see all the different ways that the league will develop entry points. for people to, I'd say, consume, but to be able to enjoy that product in different media.
Is the what other projects have you got going on that you can talk about?
Well, with The League, I'm working on a science fiction product, an intellectual property called Augment, and it'll be like, you know, Augment colon something something for the various pieces. We're working on a collection of short stories. We're working on what may eventually be a full-blown novel, provided the short stories do well. And this is an idea that was born of I had this idea for a short story that eventually blossomed into outlines for a novel that has since become a collection of short stories in the Augment universe. And Augment refers to people who have been cybernetically augmented or otherwise altered with artificiality. It's a future in which body modification culture, for whatever reason, has gone so completely wild that those who are above a certain threshold of augmentation, we'll call it, are forced to stay in a sort of ghetto in all the major cities in the country and throughout the world, for that matter. And the opportunity to explore themes of racism and prejudice and what it means to be a human being, this is classic science fiction territory in that you're using a science fiction setting to explore universal human ideas and universal conflicts in a way that you might not be able to otherwise, or since censorship is not as big a problem as it was back, let's say, in the days when the folks on the original Star Trek were using aliens as metaphors for race relations.
Right.
At least this offers you a way to present these ideas in what is hopefully a fresh presentation and also in a way that's just satisfyingly interesting. You know, everyone's familiar with the concept of racial prejudice, but what happens when you turn that on its side? You go, well, you know, if you got into a horrible accident, we had to replace more than 33 1/3% of your internal organs with, you know, synthetic organs, you'd live, but you'd have to live in this ghetto with all the other freakish robots. You know, and then suddenly it becomes, well, gosh, that could happen to me. So it's been really exciting because it's an idea that I truly enjoy speculating in and working in, being able to define that world. In my mind, the world of Augment is really well-defined so far, and I've been working with the League to develop the property further so that world has lots of little facets that make it seem real to the reader, lots of little details that help create those artificial lines within which you draw that picture.
Well, it sounds interesting. It sounds fascinating. We're going to have to get back on in the future when that gets a little closer to closer release and go for it again, because that's
yeah,
kind of exactly the opposite take you usually see when it comes to cybernetics. And, I mean, it's always making people more than human, you know, making them superhuman, and to turn that around and have that augmentation give you, you know, capabilities far beyond that of mortal man and make you less than human at the same time, I can definitely see, that's rich territory there. That's awesome.
What's really fun about working with those ideas is being able to take both sides of the issue so that the reader's never quite sure where his or her sympathies should lie. I remember watching the old Fox series, Alien Nation, which was arguably critically better received than the movie, and I'm marking myself as a horrible sci-fi nerd even bringing up the topic, but
That happened the instant you agreed to come on the show. Sorry, buddy.
Well, there was a recurring villain group called the Purist Party, I think it was.
Yes.
And they were people who were prejudiced against the alien visitors because they were terrified that unleashing a population of bigger, stronger, smarter, faster creatures who could breed more quickly than you could was a really bad idea for human survivability. And whenever I used to watch the show, I used to catch myself going, well, I'm not sure they're wrong. You know, so in working in the universe of Augment, it's been a lot of fun to say, well, clearly this type of you're no longer a human being and I hate you sort of prejudice gets our knees jerking in reaction, and we as good progressive individuals go, well, that's clearly wrong. But what happens if you then firmly establish that many of these body modification weirdos are truly dangerous? Not all of them, but enough of them that there's a very good chance that when you encounter one, he is going to be a bad person, or he is going to attack you, or he's just not able to relate to you as a human being anymore and is therefore dangerous to you. So it's been a lot of fun to put myself in that position of moral ambiguity as a writer in order to explore those themes and go, I'm not sure where my sympathies lie by the time I'm done. And because you get to bounce from character to character, and those characters have different opinions, you get to put your head in different positions. You know, the one character firmly on the side of the Augments, and you know, a crusader for Augment rights.
Sure.
And then another character works for a government agency whose job it is to keep these people under control because they're dangerous.
Sure.
You know, and then another slot is a politician who's trying to play both sides against the middle because he sees augmented human beings as a voting block.
All right. Well, this has been exciting. I want to kind of wrap this up. Just to touch on our roots together here, do you still have any action novels in the works for us other than Duke Manifest?
Absolutely. I still write for Harlequin Enterprises. I still ghostwrite in the Executioner and Matt Bolan series. I have a couple of those that I'm actually working on simultaneously right now. You know, so it's, as always, Matt Bolan is doing what he does best and taking down terrorists with no hint of irony for God and country.
Exactly.
And sometimes I catch myself having to switch gears from that to Duke Manifest and back again. It's always interesting to look back on my work because sometimes if I'm in a bad mood, then Mac Bolan is in kind of a grumpy mood, and he's much more cynical when he's shooting people in the face.
Right.
Which, you know, granted, there's a certain amount of cynicism involved in shooting terrorists in the face anyway. But it's something I truly enjoy doing, and it's been very gratifying to be able to work in a series that I enjoyed as a teenager. You know, books that my father owned that he first shared with me when I was old enough to understand them and enjoy them.
Exactly.
To now be writing those adventures is a dream come true. And really, yeah. That's the story of my writing career. It's all a dream come true.
Well, that's great. I've enjoyed all of your Executioners and Mac Bolan's to date, and I look forward to seeing what you do in expanded genres. That's going to be awesome. Well, Phil, thank you so much for spending some time with us today and letting us know what's going on here. And we look forward to seeing you again when Augments gets a little closer to release.
Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. In the meantime, everybody, don't forget, go to megatrains.blogspot.com and find out what all that is out, what that's all about. Get some text in there. Phil, you still have open submissions. And when's your deadline for that, Phil?
I believe it's July the 4th for that first collection.
Yeah, I thought it was really soon. So get those manuscripts in.
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license.